Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. What is the meaning of it, Watson? Sherlock Holmes asks. What object is served by this circle of misery and violence and fear? It must tend to some end, or else our universe is ruled by chance, which is unthinkable. But what end? There is the great standing perennial problem to which human reason is as far from an answer as ever. And that was by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in one of his Sherlock Holmes stories, from one of the four novels and 52 short stories that he wrote of Holmes. Torquemada Trump is not in jail as a convicted felon because he was elected president, however dishonestly. But as soon as his term is over, he goes to jail, unless he skips the country or successfully promotes a coup financed by his wealthy benefactors. So, of course, he is demanding to be president for life, if not successful, promoting a presidential pardon for himself. Not to mention a possibility of an imperial coup by wealthy right-wing proto-fascists and their vigilantes. The distinction between the party of Lincoln and that of Trump might have been described by Dante. And now, from The Guardian, scrutiny grows over Trump competence. But can an unfit president be removed? By Adam Gabbat. Donald Trump looked out across the White House ballroom at his audience of wealthy donors and business figures, people who had given millions of dollars to his extravagant plan to build a vast ballroom attached to the building's east wing. The president, who was 79 years old, told the crowd he had enjoyed a, quote, really historic trip, unquote, to the Middle East, and indulged in some of his familiar patter, saying his tariffs were successful and claiming that under Joe Biden, countries were, quote, literally emptying out insane asylums into our country, unquote. As his speech, given last Wednesday, labored on, Trump turned to ballroom specifics. He said, quote, so I just want to say thank you all. Simply behind me, so is a knockout panel. This panel, the next time you come here, will be opened up and gone. No problem with any of the surrounding areas. This room will be fixed. This will be like a cocktail. The whole floor will be cocktails or pre-briefings or whatever it may be. Lots of different things. So the entire floor. So you come in. The entire floor sets up. We didn't have to do any of that. Usually, you have to do that. You need different rooms to go along with a ballroom. And that's a quote from His Eminence. The speech, with its confusing false starts and repeated tangent veering, was typical of many addresses Trump, the oldest person to be inaugurated president, has given recently. The president frequently appears to lose his train of thought before retreating to the verbal safe ground of repeating frequently incorrect claims about the current success of the U.S. and, of course, his presidency. Republicans seem happy to ignore Trump's odd speeches and claims, but his performances in public settings, whether a lengthy soliloquy about how former President Barack Obama walks down the stairs, da-da-da-da-da-da, bop-bop-bop, Trump told a room full of generals in September, or his focus on water pressure, the water's dripping out and that's no good for me, I like this hair lace and sick. I like that hair nice and wet, quote unquote, the president said at a roundtable discussion about immigration in July, has slowly begun to raise questions from experts, Democrats, and the general public. Among those, what guardrails exist to remove an impeded commander-in-chief from office? The system is really set up to protect the president. It's really hard to get rid of a president between elections, says Brian Kalt, a professor at Michigan State University College of Law and author of Unable, The Law, Politics, and Limits of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. There are essentially two ways a U.S. president could be removed from office: through impeachment and conviction by the Senate, and through the aforementioned Section 4. No president has ever been removed by either measure, although three presidents have been impeached, including Trump, twice. A simple majority of the House of Representatives has to vote to impeach a president for, quote, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, unquote. And the president is then tried in the Senate, where a two-thirds majority is required to convict. In 2021, 57 of the 100 senators voted to convict Trump, 10 short of the 67 votes required. Given there are 53 Republican senators, it is hard to imagine Trump being convicted and removed from office. That leaves Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, designed to be used when a president is, quote, unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, unquote. This month, J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, who has repeatedly clashed with Trump, called for the amendment to be invoked against the president, claiming there is something genuinely wrong with this man, quote unquote. It came as Trump bizarrely reposted to Truth Social in an AI-generated fake video, which featured himself making an announcement about med-bed hospitals, and that's a quote. And after he spoke confusingly of certain elements of genius that can be given to a baby, and another quote, during a speech at the White House. Speaking about grants awarded to investigate autism, Trump added, they have to move quickly. They, when the alternative is that nothing bad can happen, let's do it now. I was just saying to Bobby, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and the group, let's do it now. Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen, quote, unquote. The examples keep coming. At a press conference last week, Trump repeated himself several times when talking about immigration, in one case appearing to become confused on the issue of so-called legal immigration. We've got the strongest border of anybody. Nobody has a border. We have a border where the numbers just came out again. You saw zero people came in illegally. Now we do take people into our country legally, but zero people, quote unquote, Trump said. Approximately 7 million people entered the U.S. from abroad during the first 3 months of 2025 alone. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment is designed for when a president is not just doing a bad job, but not doing anything at all, like can't function, Kalt said. For it to be invoked, J.D. Vance and the majority of Trump's cabinet would have to agree that Trump is unable to perform the duties of president. But even then, Trump could disagree, which would force a vote in the House and the Senate. A two-thirds majority in both would be required to remove the president, a higher bar than impeachment. Kalt said, it's a deliberately high bar. It's not just about protecting the president, although that is the most direct manifestation of it, Kalt said. It's really about protecting the system of elections. So once the people elect a president, is supposed to be 4 years before they get to say anything again. Their choice is respected, is put in place. Despite the White House claiming earlier this year that Trump's mental sharpness is second to none, quote, unquote, the examples of unusual behavior keep stacking up. There was an incident this summer where Trump invented an entire story about his deceased uncle having met the Unabomber. The time in July when he went on a sudden rant about windmills driving whales loco, and that's a quote, during a meeting with the European Commission president. The occasion when he derailed a cabinet meeting by talking unprompted for 13 minutes about the decor of the room. Last month, Democratic Congresswoman Madeleine Dean made national news after she confronted the Republican House Speaker, Mike Johnson, in an exchange about Trump's health recorded by MSNBC. The president is unhinged. He is unwell, Dean told an uncomfortable-looking Johnson. His reply was a strong indicator that there is zero appetite among Republicans to subject their leader to scrutiny. A lot of folks are on your side, too, Johnson said. The bewildering speed of computerizing human civilization seems blinding in its accelerating velocity, and I wonder if we don't slow down soon and reflect for a while where we are going and what we are doing. We might burn up like meteors streaking into Mother Gaia's gaseous atmosphere. And I think of the late Isaac Asimov, an incredibly prolific writer of science fiction, who coined the word robotics and his three laws of robotics in his remarkable book, I, Robot, in 1950. These laws, which robotic manufacturers claim to have adopted as their own, are: 1. Robots may not injure a human or, by inaction, allow a human to be harmed. 2. Robots must obey humans' orders unless that conflicts with the first law. 3. Robots must protect their own existence unless that conflicts with the first two laws. Asimov, who died in April 1992 at age 72, was one of the world's most prolific writers and quite obviously among the most imaginative. He coined the word robotics and believed these laws should be programmed in each robot's brain. The great John Campbell, doyen of sci-fi pulps, rejected Asimov's first attempt to publish a story with Astounding Science Fiction magazine in 1938. Campbell said years later that Asimov, at age 18, was lean and hungry and very enthusiastic. He couldn't write, but he could tell a story. You can teach a guy how to write, Campbell said, but not how to tell a story. And, of course, as sci-fi readers attest, Isaac Asimov is regarded as one of the genre's immortals. And now, from the Guardian newspaper, very significant Jack Kerouac story discovered after mafia boss auction. And it's written by David Barnett. A very significant unpublished story by Jack Kerouac, described as a lost chapter of the On the Road saga, has been discovered after languishing in the files of an assassinated mafia crime boss for at least 40 years. The two-page typewritten manuscript, signed by Kerouac in green ink, is titled The Holy Beat and Crazy Next Thing, and is dated 15 April 1957, 5 months before his classic of beat literature, on the Road was published. It was discovered last year during the disposal of items owned by Paul Castellano, who ran the feared Gambino crime family in New York from 1976 until he was murdered in December 1985. The assassination was orchestrated by John Gotti, a Gambino boss who was dissatisfied with Castellano's leadership and took over the organization after the hit. He was convicted of the murder of the 70-year-old Castellano in 1992 and died in prison 10 years later. It is not known how or when Castellano acquired the Kerouac story. According to the company that bought it from his estate, Your Own Museum, it is thought to have originally been given to a San Francisco poet in the Beat Generation circle. The company said, quote, "It has remained in private hands, meticulously preserved for over six decades. It is a direct, tangible link to the moment the Beat Generation exploded into the American consciousness." As was his known practice during this fertile time, Kerouac would often produce unique, typewritten pamphlets and chapbooks, sometimes referred to as brochures by his circle, for friends, lovers, and patrons. These were not commercial publications, but rather personal literary artifacts, gifts from the artist himself, typed by his own hand on his signature long sheet roll paper, and often bound simply. And that was a quote. The UK-based Kerouac scholar, Dave Moore, creator of the online Kerouac Companion, said the discovery was very significant. He added that Kerouac had visited Britain during April 1957. Kerouac was in Tangier on 25 March 1957 when he wrote letters to his agent, Sterling Lord, and to Neil Cassidy. He wrote to Philip Whalen on 10 April from London and again to Lord on 20 April, also from London. So that suggests that he was in London on 15 April. And that was a quote by Dave Moore. Subtitled A Brief Tale, the story seems to be a retelling of an episode from On the Road, the first draft of which Kerouac famously wrote in 3 weeks on one long roll of teletype paper. The writer, born in Lowell, Massachusetts, died in 1969, aged 47. The final version of the novel as published begins, "I first met Dean not long after my wife and I split up. I had just gotten over a serious illness that I won't bother to talk about, except that it had something to do with the miserably weary split up and my feeling that everything was dead. With the coming of Dean Moriarty began the part of my life you could call my life on the road." And that was by Kerouac. The two-page story, described by Your Own Museum as a quintessential lost chapter, opens more dynamically. We hit Denver with the gas gauge kissing empty and the Hudson coughing dust from 1,000 desert miles. It was that wild, holy, and crazy time when Dee and I were inseparable, two halves of a lost and found coin, and Mary Lou was with us, a sad-eyed angel in a too-tight sweater. The money was gone, spent on gas and cheap wine, and a wild night in a Tucson motel that ended with a fistfight and a sprint to the car. Now we are broke. The sky was the color of a dirty nickel, and a mean mountain wind cut down Larimer Street. And that's a quote. Kerouac assigned fictional names to his Beat friends in his Romana Clef novels, Dean being Dean Moriarty, his name for Neil Cassidy, and Mary Lou, the name for Lou Ann Henderson, who Cassidy married when she was just 15. Also referenced in the story is Carlo Marx, the poet Allen Ginsberg. The manuscript was discovered by Jerry Bronfield at Your Own Museum, a New York-based company dealing in signed and rare collectible artifacts. Bronfield said, "We acquired it at the Paul Castellano estate sale in November 2024. It was during this season that his mansion in Long Island, New York, was being listed for sale. Preceding the sale of the property, the beneficiaries organized a private auction of Castellano's collection. The amount of time Castellano owned this piece is unknown. However, it has never been seen on public records. Over the past year, Bronfield and his team have been verifying the provenance of the piece with a third-party company called Proper and Verified, carrying out exhaustive checks and testing. He said, "The short story was bound in the form of a pamphlet. It is 2 pages long, and the last page is signed by Jack Kerouac. The signature is in green ink, and it shows clear signs of a fountain pen, damp folds in the paper." The story takes place within the timeline of Kerouac's masterpiece, On the Road. The dating of this short story shows that it was written during the writing process of On the Road, and it seems to us that it was created by Kerouac for the purpose of him further understanding the setting and characters. Evidently, it was never published, and we find no signs of this work anywhere. Despite it never being authenticated before, the provenance was too substantial for us not to take a risk. To our delight, after lab work and thorough investigation, it was confirmed that the item was from that time. On top of this, the signature was consistent with all confirmed examples of Kerouac. And that was a quote by Jerry Bronfield at Your Own Museum. Your Own Museum is now offering the manuscript for sale at $8,500, which would be 6,300 lire. This is Michael McCusker. I remember during the many earlier years after I left Vietnam, and while I participated in activities against that war, I felt I was still there in the paddies and jungles among my friends, that this most starkly central experience of my life would never end, that would continue in my mind and afterward in my writing, this most core experience and definitive horror. And though sometimes my old combat comrades later seemed less than the sharp sting of life and death they were to me when we endured and warred in our small part of the most absurd and criminal war in our nation's history, I have never forgotten them, though many who survived Vietnam have died in the succeeding years and new millennium. My tenure with the USMC ended on the 19th day of this month, October, in 1967. I became a member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War the following year and campaigned for Eugene McCarthy's failed campaign with many other Vietnam vets the following year, 1968.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.